Save big money when you shop at Menards. Transform your home in one weekend with exterior wood stain and sealer from Dutch Boy. It provides one coat protection on decks, fences, siding, and outdoor furniture. It repels rain after just 4 hours of application. That means quicker results, saving you both time and money. Our knowledgeable team is ready to help bring your dreams to life, 1 gallon at a time. Stop by your local Menards today. Save big.
But then doesn't that lead to the bigger question? What are we doing with these engines? Jesus God.
But I do feel it was a bit of a silly move by Charles to squeeze out at that point.
Well, hopefully the hangover will be worse than your prediction. Hello and welcome to Essential F1. I'm Jenny Gauss, standing in for Miss Lucky Pants, Nicola Hume, who was at the World Cup final. Her loss, my gain, and I'm joined by the Spa-Francorchamps of F1 commentators. It is Ben Edwards. Ben, I didn't know if that was a compliment or a negative.
It's always a fun story from Jim, whatever he says. But I have to say, I did enjoy Spa, and particularly as one of my closest friends from school days, he took his family out there to Spa, and he said to me, they had a wonderful time. They had a really, really great time, really enjoyed it. He thought Kimi Antonelli was outstanding. He thought it was great to see Ferrari competitive when they were watching. They were actually at the grandstand on the exit of the first bend.
So that's a great place to be.
It was a great place to be. But it was interesting, he loved the effort that Lando Norris put in, going from, you know, the penalty that he had, moving his way right up to the top, then missing out a little bit on, especially with a slow pit stop. That was a bit of a problem, but he really enjoyed that. I also felt for Oscar Piastri, because of course for both McLarens there were incidents of one sort or another. Piastri had the contact with Leclerc that definitely slowed him down a fraction, but they can still be very competitive. And that's the thing, I think, that we're finding is that the top four teams are so unpredictable, really. Yes, okay, Antonelli's doing a fantastic job, and we do feel for George, we'll be talking about that, but I do feel it's still quite unpredictable as to what's going to happen next, and that's something we'll be talking about later.
Yeah, lots of talking points, I think, from the weekend, even though there was no massive drama that unfolded. And we have a top-notch guest to help us through the Spa talking points, none other than former Top Gear and Grand Tour exec producer, turned author and Clarkson's Farm producer. That's a chuff job. It is Andy Willman.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome.
It's nice to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me back.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, it's good to have you, Andy. Thank you so much for coming on. We're going to get some good comments from you. We have to go back on what happened in Spa, of course, and then we'll also be looking forward to what might happen at the Hungarian Grand Prix this coming weekend before they get their summer break. You know, but I gather there are going to be some updates on the cars as well. So lots to think about. It's going to be fun.
So, producer Jim, what have you got for us today?
Okay, just when you thought George Russell's season was back on track, Spa 26 happens. Slower than Kimi all weekend and complains about a lack of straight line speed. This was perfectly illustrated on lap one from Eau Rouge up the Kemmel Straight before getting punted off by Hamilton. Now 50 points behind Kimi and visibly upset in post-race interview. How does George save his season from here? Discuss.
Oh, it is quite a tricky one, isn't it, for George Russell? I mean, I do feel for him because it was so sad. There was that incident between him and Lewis Hamilton so early on in the race. And we can talk about the penalties later. But just the fact that he was out of the race from so early on, that did hurt, because we want to see the battle between Antonelli and George Russell, because we do see them as the top team. And then it's always great when you've got the two drivers racing against each other and trying to deliver what they can. I felt for George, because losing three places going up that straight was painful for him. And I can see why he felt I have to make a move on Lewis here, even though it's a slightly risky place there, but it's always a bit risky on the first lap. So, yeah, I don't know. What do you guys think?
Is the one thing going in his favour that might swing the pendulum is Mercedes reliability has been up and down. So we need, you know, another DNF, and that's 25, and he's a winner, and it's 25. The chunks that they can take out of each other are quite massive with these sort of Mercedes problems that we're seeing. So, I honestly can't see him doing it on skill at the minute.
That's interesting. Why do you think he can't?
Because
do
Antonelli
that?
Seems to be like, I mean, obviously George Russell's really good, but Antonelli seems to be like bloody Verstappen in terms of, you know, all right, Martin said it, and obviously bow down to him, but he goes, he is generational, looking to be a generational talent. Because how can you be that confident, that composed, when you're like too young to go to Avis and get a bloody hire car? It's quite incredible that the way he's soaking it up.
Yeah, it's very impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It's not just I'm fast, because we've seen fast.
Yeah.
Or I think all these kids that come in these days are faster than... They get up to speed faster than
I think part of it's the technology, though. They're having to get their heads into this power technology, whereas the other racers are so used to that not being part of it. It's just about driving. I think these youngsters are almost gaining from that a little bit. I don't know.
The whole sort of, right, okay, we've got all the hybrid stuff. We've got the harvesting.
Yeah.
And then it just suits their brains more.
It feels like that a bit. I don't know if that's...
Yeah.
If you look at the progression from last year, the technology's changed, but Kimi got into a really dark place. This time last year, Hungary especially, he was in tears for a lot of those timings. Yeah. And he's found a new personality that's come out, and a new strength, character and ability. His learning from last to this is absolutely unbelievable.
You forget that. He took such a dip, didn't he? He started well. Massive dip. You think, oh, Christ, have they gone too soon?
Yeah. And without that dip, I do wonder if he wouldn't be in the place he is now, because he learned so much by being on the back foot, by having to fight, by finding his strength of character. And that taught him so much about himself.
But then again, that very thing you say suggests how he's special. Because some drivers did, you know, how many is Verstappen destroyed?
Yeah.
You know, by virtue of being in the same car or ish car, you know, and he doesn't. And he's like 8 years old, and then up he comes. It's like, what?
Well, it means that Kimi's on 204 points, Lewis 159, George 154 points.
Yeah.
So that's 50 points behind, and Charles Leclerc on 126. So that's the championship standings. And it's a big hit for George, isn't it? And just seeing how upset he was. You know, Kimi, on the other hand, is great. He's doing fine. But how does George get himself out of this hole?
I think George has the capability to get himself out of this hole, but I think he actually feels he is a bit worried about, is his car different to Kimi's at the moment? And there is a little bit of discussion going on. I think Toto felt that actually it was partly, for some reason, Mercedes' power, it affected McLaren and both Mercedes cars coming out of turn one. They actually lost a bit of power going up that hill. So whether it was something that they'd organised, I don't know, but it definitely hurt the start procedure, but after that they were totally on it. And the way that Antonelli, you know, later on had to fight his way past Leclerc, well, that was impressive too.
I looked at the telemetry from all of the Mercedes powered cars going off the front, and yes, some of them lost a little bit, but George Russell lost a whole heap. And I think this is the thing that makes him so depressed, is that he doesn't know, he doesn't understand. Yeah. And when you can't understand what your car is doing, you can't try and put it right.
No, and so it's not set up, is it? Because usually it's set up that one side of the garage, another side of the garage. What was the, like earlier in the season with Hamilton and his brakes, you know, that seems to have been like evened out now. But this is power, which is nothing to do with one left-hand side, right-hand side of the garage going in different directions. So there can't be any nonsense going on.
Because there's lots of people that says, oh, it's a conspiracy.
What? No.
Andy says no. Definitely not.
There's a man like taking bits of electricity away. Yeah.
Right, producer Jim.
Okay, Ferrari and Charles Leclerc continue their return to form with second place that looked like it could be a win after a lucky VSC. However, Leclerc got away with a dangerous looking defence from Oscar Piastri. Should he have been given a penalty for that? Discuss.
That is quite a good question, actually, because that was a bit challenging, I think. And Leclerc did not get a penalty because they said he had the racing line. But Piastri, yes, he wasn't fully alongside that he got the rights. But I do feel it was a bit of a silly move by Charles to squeeze out at that point. Unlike him, because he's a very good racer normally, but it did feel to me that actually he probably should have had a penalty. But in the end, actually, it was quite fun to see him then leading the race with the safety car period helping him, and then the battle with Antonelli. So it actually made for a good race in some ways. Yeah. It was good he didn't get a penalty, but it did feel a bit strange to me.
Yeah, the inconsistency, again, of FIA penalties, it never really stops. And people say, should they have a permanent steward in there that goes all around and just that's the panel? And there's arguments for and against, but when you have a race like that, that seems discrepancies between the field and that race alone, let alone the past race and the next race, that's the bit that sticks in my mind and not great.
Yeah, I thought, honestly, when Hamilton got his penalty and Leclerc didn't, I thought, have they got that ref from Argentina, the Egypt? Have they put him in? He's like, I've got nothing to do, I've been fired. So I know what I'll do. I'll go and marshal a race, a steward a
race. Why not?
Because I didn't get Hamilton's at all. They said he understeered in. Is that right?
Yeah, he had a bit. But he admitted it. But it was
lap,
lap
one,
one,
full tank of
exactly.
fuel.
Exactly. Yeah. I agree. Lap one. Normally, they sort of let things off a bit on lap one. And I understand that totally as a racer. But yeah, not doing Leclerc did feel odd, didn't it?
It really did. And by virtue of doing Hamilton.
Yes.
Yeah.
That
exactly.
was what was just weird. But you're right. If Leclerc had been at the front, or with a 10-second or 5-second penalty hanging over him, everyone would have put the kettle on.
Yes,
they?
Exactly.
It's just there's nothing for us to watch.
So it made
anymore.
For a good race.
Yeah, true.
But yeah.
Yeah. Right, producer Jim.
Okay, despite Leclerc's best efforts, Kimi Antonelli was pretty untouchable all weekend, bagging his 6th win of the season. Can this kid be stopped? Discuss.
No. It's your answer, isn't it? He looks unstoppable.
He's very impressive. I'm really impressed. The speeds he had right through practice, qualifying, and then taking top spot, and then dealing with what he had to deal with in the race, with the safety car hurting him for a while, with Leclerc getting in front, but he just dealt with it so well.
Yeah, I don't think he can be stopped. I think this is a quick answer to your question, Jim. We're going to be talking about the weather in a minute, because to pad this one out, because I can't see how he can be stopped.
I have heard from others that George Russell, they do think George Russell will come back in the second half of the season.
But what's the definition of coming back?
Yeah.
That means he's got to be better than Antonelli.
In the same car.
Yeah. And Antonelli seems to be so special.
He does.
I mean, I loved him last season because he looked like his face was like, I can do this again next week. I get to come back and give me this car again. He looks so happy.
Yeah, and he's got good
joyous.
Character. And it's lovely that the other top drivers, the older drivers with championships that they've won already, like Lewis and Max, they chat to him quite often after the race.
He's like, he's like a little mascot to everybody.
Yeah.
He's fantastic. But I can't see him being stopped. Absolutely cannot.
No, even with more technicals for that Mercedes power unit, you still can't see a way that George can come back and beat him at the end of the day.
Yeah.
6 wins, it's quite incredible.
Because was George not contradicting himself over the weekend, going, my driving style, no, it's the car, that's fit. That was a bit of a muddle, wasn't it? I mean, yesterday he could point to the car. Absolutely, he could point to the car. But you don't hear any of this angst from Kimi about if he has a crap race or something, which he doesn't.
Normally, unless it's a reliability problem.
But you don't hear that angst from Verstappen if he has a bad race.
Yeah.
About what am I doing?
Yeah, just a bit lost at the moment, poor George. I think we gave you more than you bargained for there.
Yeah,
well, I was slightly disappointed. Nico Rosberg, 2016, that's all I'll say. Rounding out the top three was Max Verstappen, got a front row start after some clever teamwork in qualifying and tried to mix things up on the first lap with Kimi. However, those McLaren stories still won't go away. Are regular podiums enough to keep Max at Red Bull or even in F1? Discuss.
Yeah, it's a good question to know how Max is feeling. He seemed to be pretty positive after that race, getting a decent podium again, doing it regularly. I think it's going to be very interesting going just before, actually, we go into the summer break. Let's see how it goes in Hungary as well for him, because he can be very impressive there. But it'll give him a chance to then just back out of Formula One for a little bit and think, where am I? What do I want to do?
I mean, this time of year traditionally is when seats are filled, contracts are renewed, or someone goes loose cannon like Daniel Ricciardo all of a sudden going to Renault and killing everyone's summer break because we all had to write about it for 2 weeks. This has got the similar feeling of there's something brewing. We've seen Jos Verstappen and Max's manager at McLaren. We've seen them having talks with all sorts of people. And I just don't know which way it's going to go.
You see, what I'm a bit of a fraud on this one because I've just read bits and bobs about the McLaren stuff. So I defer to you about how much knowledge you have of it. I've read that it's like he's been seen there. But usually people get seen at the competitor's garage management for a reason. to do with their own team. But Jos sitting in McLaren isn't going to make Red Bull do what? You know, what? I don't get what they're trying to do. But it's so if he is going to there, he's either going for better coffee or his son wants to go there. But why would he not go to Mercedes, even though Wolf says his seats are full cast iron? Because McLaren, Zach Brown, said his seats are full, didn't he? Nobody's going anywhere.
Yeah.
But the way Piastri's driving at the minute, I'd be like, well, we'll buy you out, mate, and put Max in there.
Really? Are you disappointed with the way Piastri's going?
Yeah, compared to last season.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. Are you not? Are you...
He's certainly not delivering as well as he did last year at this stage. It does feel to me, though, it's a bit like George, you know, as well, because they're talented drivers, but they just don't seem to be gearing into this modern style of car in quite the same way as perhaps their teammates. But I still think Oscar has great talent. So
yeah,
I'm a bit intrigued to see what happens.
I think he's still a bit shell-shocked from everything that happened last year. And people call me out on that and say, surely not. But when you've gone through such a great season and then it disappears in front of your very eyes and you've taken the advice of Mark Webber and all those people around you, friends, family, and it goes against you, I think it takes a good while. You either come out the blocks kicking and fighting and going, I'm not going with this. But they couldn't do that because the McLaren car was behind with everybody else because they put so much into the last bit of the season. So one hand behind the backs. And I think Piastri's just a bit heartbroken from everything that happened last year. And it wasn't Max Verstappen that came up from behind and took it. It was his own teammate. And that's got to hurt more than anything in the world if your teammate in a great car beats you.
But true. But we're back to your point about Antonelli. A little kid who has a massive dip last season and hasn't led it. And at this level, surely, you've got to put that stuff behind it. You know?
I mean, maybe he has. I've not spoken to him at length and said, tell me your woes. I don't think he'd tell me even if I was best friends with him, because a driver's mentality, Ben, is to not let their guard down. But it must have hurt.
It must have done, yeah. But who knows? It's all a bit unpredictable, as ever. Always is in the way of Formula One, isn't it?
Producer Jim, help me out here.
I just want to cover up. I want to cover up.
Whether he's going to stay in
F1.
Yes. I think, yes, he would. I think he would stay with Red Bull on the hope that things are going to get better. Because they're allowing him to have fun with his Nürburgring outings, aren't they? Which scratches an itch. But then doesn't that lead to the bigger question? What are we doing with these engines? Jesus God. What are we doing with this?
They are coming up with some changes for next year, aren't they?
But that's kind of going back, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like it's reducing the whole sort of power.
I think it makes sense because you then hopefully don't run out of power at the end of straights. I mean, that is a little bit of a strange one that we still see at the moment when they're actually running out of power at the end of the straight.
I think personally... All right, engine manufacturers, are we agreed, go in to use these cars as test beds for their road cars, like they did with semi-automatic gearboxes and stuff.
Yeah.
And they're doing with it. Personally, which has got nothing to do with anybody, I honestly think electric cars will be the laser disc of their... When the history of motoring is written, I don't think we'll have electric cars.
Interesting.
But I think it'll be a blip. I really do. That it will be a laser disc. So why isn't F1 now going, we're so big after Drive to Survive, let's go to synthetic fuels, let's get some V10s back, and then, because they cannot ignore Sainz, Verstappen having a really logical moan, not a bratty one about my car or this sort of stuff. They're moaning about the principles of it. So why do they obviously know engine manufacturers give them a ton of money, but can't F1 go, we're now big enough
they're obviously thinking about these things. You're right. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if they go down this route. Yeah.
Why can't they go, right, we'll be a test bed for synthetic fuel?
Yeah.
Because...
I mean, they seem to be covering off that bit quite well with the whole synthetic fuels. And they're pushing that side of technology quite well.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. A lot of people want to see a bigger horsepower, proper engine going round, and they want to hear that.
And it's a fudge anyway, because they can't go all Formula E, like full electric, which is like... So hybrid, I mean, who... you know, I think only Toyota sort of push really hybrids vehemently these days. The rest of the manufacturers sort of go, oh, Christ, well, we'll build one if we need to because nobody's buying the electric cars as much. So everyone's got, manufacturers just seem to have minimal interest in hybrid. What is this doing then?
Interesting.
What is this doing?
Is it just that we're really old? So just want to hear
that.
Something, yeah. You know,
what,
grunty.
We're just having a moan.
Yeah. We love
biscuits
that.
Biscuits now.
Yeah, yeah, I love that. Producer Jim.
Hybrids, V10. I mean, synthetic fuels, V10.
Talking about old people.
A stellar weekend from Arvid Lindblad, an amazing move from Franco Colapinto means the best of the rest battle is tied with Alpine and Racing Bulls, both on 61 points in the constructors. However, Gabriel Bortoleto has outscored them for a second straight race. Could Audi start to be a threat? Discuss.
It's really interesting. It does look like it's three teams now really fighting outside those top four teams to score the rest of the points. Yeah, as you say, because Williams are now likely to lose out to Audi, and Carlos Sainz has been moaning about that a bit too already, I notice. That move that Franco Colapinto made was fantastic, getting past Gasly and Lawson because they were battling and he nipped down the inside. That was good. That was a good move. And he got in to finish in 10th place, so get a point. But it is, I think you're right, it's going to be tough. Because Racing Bulls are doing a great job at the moment. Alpine, a bit up and down, aren't they?
I think it's going to be interesting to see where the developments and upgrades go. Because this is the time of year when they all start bringing them out. So we know Aston Martin have got a massive one plan. We'll talk about that more later. So who gets the development tweaks? A lot of the things that Alan McNish, now team principal for Audi, has put in will only come to fruition over the next few weeks. So I'm intrigued to see what they can do. They've got a great driver lineup at Audi.
Yeah.
They should have scored more points, I think. Certainly at the start of the season, they were unlucky.
Bortoleto, who keeps scoring them at the moment.
Yeah, and poor old Nico Hülkenberg hasn't got any, which is bizarre because he should have some.
Is that a seat for Sainz then?
Well, possible. Yeah, there is talk about the science.
Was it what they would wander over?
I don't think he can stay where he is at Williams at the moment. I digress massively. But I definitely think Audi are a threat. And they're such a big car company. They need to be a threat, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I am quite impressed with where they came out of the traps. You know, I know you said they were scoring points first race, didn't they? From memory. Points in the first race.
Yeah.
I thought they'd be buggering around with Cadillac. Not that bad at the back, but, you know, I thought Williams and everyone would be whipping them. But this is impressive. This is impressive because Racing Bulls and Alpine have got a lot of experience in there. You're saying, McNish is saying next few weeks. So does that cover the summer break or do you mean next?
So if we look at what they're going to introduce at Hungary, I don't know because I haven't spoken to them at this point. But Hungary update, and then coming off the back of that, they normally see an engine upgrade for Italy. It'll be interesting to see where they go and how they can bring points back.
It's interesting about upgrades, how you don't always, because Arvid Lindblad did a great job this weekend, but poor Liam Lawson didn't actually have the full upgrade on his car that Lindblad had. It always feels a bit awkward when your teammate's got the latest up.
Why
but
do
I,
they
I understand
do that?
That.
Why do they do that? Why do they give them to one car?
Yeah, I know, but sometimes there's no options to doing that for teams, especially this time of year when it's very busy. It's easier once you get to the August break and then you can get everything together again.
Can't roll them out as fast as they'd like to. So they put them on one car and they're still rolling them out at the factory. Now, sometimes if it's a really good upgrade, they manage to force it out and bring it to the race on the Saturday so that they can do that. But a lot of the time, it's just production and they just can't get it on both cars at the same time.
Or do they ever kind of hedge their bets? So we'll keep the other car as is.
We've seen that before, haven't we?
Yeah.
Certainly,
if you're talking about Red Bull and how they used to roll things out, if it works, suddenly it was on the top car. Right, producer Jim.
Honourable mention for Isaac Hadjar with an engine penalty. He gave Max a tow in qualifying before going from the back of the grid to sixth place, continuing his impressive run of six races with points finishes. Does this prove that the dreaded Red Bull second seat syndrome was a Christian Horner thing? Discuss.
He did a great job, didn't he? Coming from the back, Hadjar. And I thought actually the team played well with that early pit stop. To change tyres and then change them back again. That was clever.
Yeah, very clever. And the safety car played into their hands, so they were able to bring him in and put him on. I think, I didn't know if it was new or used tyres, but whatever tyres they put him on, it worked. And he just was able to go through the field. It was like watching a knife and butter. It was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think? Do you think he's
the... Well, I've got a question again for you two, like cleverer than me on these things. Is it not the case, that whole thing of like they built a car for Verstappen and they pass that was just he can drive it and then the other driver just sink or swim. Now we've got a new car in 26. Is it more benign? That it suits, you know, it's got a wider sort of, it's more welcoming to another driver.
I do think that's
just got lucky.
I think that is a good point.
He's good, but
he
got lucky.
But you're right. And I think it's harder being Max's teammate. You're right. When they're under the same rules for a long time, Max will always take it the way he wants it to be. As you say, this year it's completely new rules. They've had to completely redesign the cars and it's given Hadjar a chance alongside him to do a really good job. I totally agree with you,
I think the nurturing instinct of Laurent Mekies at Red Bull is very different to Christian Horner and Helmut Marko. The two of them didn't really nurture and put an arm around and say, it's okay, they're there. Not at all similar to like Toto and Kimi Antonelli. So now it's a little bit skewed towards actually, we'll give you time. We've got patience. We love that you're part of our family. So I agree that it's a reset this year has done them well, but also it's a different atmosphere.
And that older generation who are sink or swim and ruthless. And you're right, Mekies just doesn't seem to have that attitude. And Wolf doesn't. He's smart. You know, what's the point in having an academy unless you nurture them in every direction? There's no point in having an academy. You might as well just be like Tom Walkinshaw or... any of the other, Bernie or whatever, and just go, right, you out, you in, you know, that kind of thing.
But I was impressed with Hadjar, by the way, at the weekend, because he helped, the way he helped Max with that toe during qualifying. So he's serving as sort of backup to Max, but then in the race himself, he just did his own thing from the back and delivered a fantastic result from the back. I think that was impressive. Right, we need to get into our next part, which is we need to talk about section. And actually, what we want to talk about once again is Aston Martin. Because,
oh no, do we have to?
I know. Looking at the time differences that Aston Martin had at Spa to all the other teams, that was astonishing. And when Fernando Alonso is such a talented driver, and to be two laps down at the end of the Grand Prix, just looking at the qualifying times, you know, they were so far off. And it's an Adrian Newey car, you know, he's one of the great star designers. But we are expecting a bit of an upgrade, and I do think that might make a bit of difference. What do we think?
What, new car?
Well, I mean, it sounds like it's going to be a lot different.
Do you?
Okay.
Yeah. So a whole B-spec car that Newey's looked at and gone, hang on, I know this isn't working now. I know this isn't working now. Let's just go back to the drawing board, literally the drawing board, and see what we can do to improve it. And I'm hearing things like 2 seconds faster a lap. That's crazy.
And Honda have been allowed effectively to do more on the engine because the rules say you can only do more if you're right down at the bottom.
And they literally are.
They are right down at the bottom.
So they're allowed more... work,
development work,
more development and more budget on that to get that right, which has to be, because this is like, none of us want to see this, do we?
No, it's
don't
sad
see,
to
don't see Alonso
so far
down there.
I agree.
Care about Stroll, but you don't want to see Alonso down there. It's just a joke.
Yeah. And watching him at the end of the race do like burnouts and stuff, just to, I don't know if he was trying to have some fun, if he was just angry with life, if he's, you know, if this is a signal of actually he's hacked off and he wants out.
And
I
you
kind of
want that story to, in a cinematic way, have a conclusion. You don't want Alonso to go, right, I'll ring up Flavio and get a seat at Alpine, you know, just so I can get in the points again and sort of come eighth and that sort of stuff. You want, like Lewis has had with Ferrari, you want the full movie, you know, comeback that's like, I stuck with it. Adrian Newey got it right in the end, blah, blah, blah. Because Honda and Newey can't be wrong forever, can
you? No. But Honda do take a while sometimes. We've seen that before, where Honda's power is not always fast straight away, but they always develop it, as you say. They always come up with some very good stuff.
Why the Honda Jazz, but they service that really well. Power Road in Chiswick when I had it. But
a bit different.
Jim and I were messaging each other this morning.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, we weren't in bed.
Is this safe to broadcast?
No, we both found the same picture. So that's our sad lives on Instagram. Right. So it's a picture, Senna, 1991, qualifying time, Spa, 147.8.
Wow.
Alonso, 2026, qualifying time, 150. So 2.2 seconds slower.
Amazing.
Just rams it home, doesn't it?
Mm. Mind you, Fernando, I'm rather looking forward, and we're going to talk about this shortly. Fernando Alonso, with an upgrade, I'm sure it's not quite going to happen like this. He took his first ever win in Hungary, and we're going to Hungary next. Who knows?
What do you know about these upgrades, apart from they're massive? Do you know?
Massive.
Like, which areas?
Not until we get to there and see it on Friday morning.
Okay.
That'll be our first real notice of what's changed, how it's going to react. But with Adrian there, and as you say, the Honda upgrade, bearing in mind, I still find this absolutely mad, that Honda sacked all their staff that worked with F1. So they started the program again, Adrian expected the whole team to come back.
Mm.
And no one had told him they're not there anymore.
They're not there.
They've gone. No. So they had to start from scratch again.
But they've got form, haven't they? Imagine, remember when they sort of went to Braun. Oh, bye. Yeah. You're not going to do anything. We'll give you a massive, like, divorce settlement. Yeah. It's just, yeah, they have got form on this.
They really have. Painful times, but we will see. We will see what Hungary will bring. Well, before we move on, hit the bell or follow us wherever you get your podcasts. We are Essential F1 on social media as well, at Essential F1. Right, Andy, last time I hear you wowed everybody with an epic tale of Michael Schumacher. I didn't hear that, so I'm a bit gutted, but you've got another belter to blind us with.
It might be in my book, that anecdote.
Whoopsie, should have read it.
Out now in paper.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. I've rewritten it completely.
What's its title?
So
just
if
so
anybody's
you know.
Bought a hardback, it's totally different. It's not just smaller words. No, it's, along the way, when we would meet racing drivers through the work we were doing, which is like not in your motorsport world. So little stories come our way. I saw couple of months ago a guy called Michael T, who must be 94 now, started LAT Photography. I think we all know they're like, you know, there's Steve and T at the tracks and everything. They are absolutely the daddies of the whole motorsport photography thing. So right back to the 50s. Had a cup of tea with him, and he had this iconic photograph of Fangio doing a four-wheel drift. And have we got the picture?
We have.
So there he is, four-wheel drift. And obviously these days that would lose you time. In those days, what was the saying? It used to be an art, now it's a science.
Yeah, there was no downforce in those days. So four-wheel drift was a major part of it.
Was a major part. And he could do it better than anybody. And he was telling me about percentages, Michael T. Was the drivers always used to talk about percentages. Like, I think Trantignant would drive at 88% of his ability, because obviously these days you can crash and live, whereas those days you crashed and died.
Absolutely.
So they went with percentages, and Fangio was always around about 98%.
Wow.
Sort of modestly said so. Mm. And then, anyway, Michael stands by the side of the track to take that four-wheel drift picture, and he stands right on the white line. And he said he would have only ever done it with two drivers, Moss and Fangio, that he would stand there.
Really?
And he comes past, and it's like literally past his shoes.
Wow.
So he's got his camera, 36 exposures. He goes back to change his film. So he walks back away from the track to where he's got his little box and his film and everything. And he's like messing around, putting new film in. And then suddenly hears this roar. And then his like trousers, like whoosh, like that. And he's a good few feet back from the track. And he turns around. There's Fangio's car, like off on the grass.
A bit out
of control, coming past. And then he watches, and Fangio catches it, corrects it, carries on down the track. And then later on at the pits afterwards, Fangio is shouting at him, and he's like, he's only speaking Italian or Spanish, and like, Michael T's going, what's he saying? What's he saying? And Fangio's, and one of the guys saying, he's going, you moved. And he'd locked in on him as his like tree trunk or marker point anything.
Marker point, yeah.
But it means he was so in the zone.
Wow.
That wherever he was, he went to, you know.
Yeah. That, no, I get that.
And you also sort of think, Christ, they had to be so flexible in those days.
Yeah.
Because everything was not precision. But he said Fangio was a sort of trance of his, he got into that rhythm. And even though he was a good 10 feet into the grass, he went straight
for
him.
That's fascinating.
I know. So it was just a little good tale behind that thing.
That's lovely. It's so good hearing about some of the early parts of Formula 1. Because Fangio was an absolute superstar. It was obviously before I got involved in Formula 1. But then reading about him, and other people might want to do this if you're a Formula 1 fan, but you haven't followed the back. Yeah. Fangio is one of the most fascinating, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely 100% agree.
100% fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. Great stuff. It's time for us to look forward now because we've got the Hungarian Grand Prix coming up straight away, just coming up this coming weekend. And it's an interesting place always because it's a different, so different to Silverstone and Spa where you've got these long straights. And when we go to Hungary, it's always different, isn't it? The reaction you get from teams because the straights are not so long. There's a lot of braking, so that will help the recharging. It could change which teams actually it suits. It's very hard to predict. But that's what we've got to do. We've got to try and predict who's gonna finish in the top three.
I think I love Hungary more than almost any other Grand Prix that we go to.
It is a good one.
It's the whole place. Budapest is special, I think. And if people ask me, where do I go to watch my first race? I don't want a Silverstone or I've been to Silverstone somewhere else.
Yeah.
I say that one's a good one to go to because it's before the summer break. There's always something going on, fires, rain, I don't know. It's just that place, isn't it? And it's in a natural amphitheatre, so you can see quite a lot from wherever you are.
It feels quite old school, doesn't
it?
Yeah.
And from the journalism point of view, of course, you often keep an eye on what the teams might be thinking about, what driver they might have, because you were mentioning that earlier. And that is something when we get to Hungary that is always one of the big stories. Which driver is going to which team for next year? We don't see many.
Because it lands just at that point in the calendar where all the stories are popping up.
Yeah.
Good point.
And I just wonder what's going to bubble up this weekend. I'm going, so I'll be there on the ground and probably prodding a few people to find out what's going to happen. Ooh, They'll probably be playing hardball. But I do like just asking those questions and really trying to nail down people of what's the answer?
Right.
Can I get something more out of it? So we'll see.
Good.
Is it prediction time now?
It is.
I think it is.
It is.
Okay. And Ben.
Yes.
Not being amazing, but you had a great weekend.
Well,
last
a slightly
weekend.
Better result for
How
once.
How did you manage to do that? Right, I'll just explain what we do. It's time for the Prediction Championship of the World. The rules of the Prediction Championship of the World are, once again, friendly, simple, quick. Pick a winner. You receive 6 points for the win, 4 points if you get second place, and 2 points for third, and 1 point for the fastest lap. Andy, you across that? Our esteemed guest, Ben, producer Jim, and Nicola, who's not here, but she will have her pick, and Andy, you all get your pick. So, huge news, as we said. Mm. Ben, you were the top scorer
from
Spa.
Yeah, but I'm still at the bottom.
Well, the comeback is on.
By how much?
So, Nicola scored 42 points. She didn't score anything. She was too busy at the World Cup.
Yeah, 42 from before. Say,
yeah.
But that's very
when
unusual.
You're doing shots.
Yeah.
Very unusual for her to not score. Yeah.
Misguided. Producer Jim, 32 points, 6 points for an Antonelli win. Team guest, me, last time out.
Yeah.
I also got 6 points for an Antonelli win. We're up to 14 points. But Ben, 8 points for Kimi and Max leads you up to 14 points.
Yeah, still at the bottom. but it's fun. And it is always so unpredictable, isn't it?
Yes,
so,
it is.
Andy, you've got the job
first.
Of trying to work out. What do you think?
Right, I'm going to throw a wild card in, opposite to what we've been talking about. I'm going for Max for a win.
Mm-hmm.
Red Bull on that track.
Yep.
And I'm going for Lewis for second. He loves Hungary.
He does.
He has an amazing record there, actually.
Yeah. He does. And it's also what I want.
Yeah.
Because I want him to beat Leclerc. I'm so happy about that. And then my third, I'm going for Hadjar.
Oh,
I'm going for a Red Bull 1 and 3.
Yeah.
Because I can't see why that car won't get rid of some of its deficits on that track.
Okay.
Oh, that's interesting.
Fastest lap?
Antonelli.
Fair play.
Right. Love that. Ben?
Okay. It is a bit unpredictable. I mean, yeah, Lewis has had 8 wins there. Most ever of anybody. Yeah. But I'm not sure. I'm actually feeling that we are going to get a bit of a change, but I'm going a slightly different direction. I'm going to go for Norris.
Yeah. Ooh, hey.
Lando. I just think...
What new upgrades and
might,
what
might
have
get
you?
An upgrade that might work for that track.
Okay.
I don't know. I do find it unpredictable. I'm going to put Norris first, Verstappen second, Antonelli third. Now that he's leading the championship, he might just be sensible sometimes rather than always going for the win. You have to see how that works. But and I'm going to go... I'll go Hamilton fastest lap because he is always so impressive around there.
Good point.
Okay. Right, time for us to feel very jealous now because Nicola has sent us this prediction, not just from New York City, but from the World Cup final. Have a look at this. Viva who?
Hey, babies. Apologies for not being there for the podcast this week. I'm kind of at the World Cup final watching Franco Colapinto versus Carlos Sainz. I might be rooting for Carlos Sainz. Viva España. Hang on a minute. Okay. Predictions. P1, Antonelli. P2, Max Verstappen. P3, George Russell. Fastest lap goes to Kimi Antonelli. I hope you can hear me. This is wild. Wild. Should I have my bucket hat?
Well, hopefully the hangover will be worse than your predictions. Right, producer Jim.
Okay, I'm going for Hamilton first. Small turbos always goes well there. Yeah. Kimi Antonelli second. Russell third with Kimi fastest lap.
Okay. Well, we will see. Let us know your predictions, by the way. If you've got something wonderful up your sleeve on the chat below, you can let us know who you think is going to be fastest lap and the top three. Hit the bell or follow us wherever you get your podcast from.
Great stuff, Jenny. It's been great having you with us. Thank you so much for coming along.
Thank you for having me again. It's been great.
Yeah. And Andy, great to
have
you.
Thank you very much. Thank you really for having me back.
Oh, it's good. Brilliant. Good stuff. Well, we will, of course, be focusing on Hungary coming up this next weekend just to see what happened there. And then, of course, we're going into a bit of a break, but there'll be plenty to talk about. So I do look forward to you joining us again.